Welcome to another episode of Comedy Wham Presents with me, your host, Valerie, and we're on location at Altercation Festival, so Miss Purrington is back at home. ComedyWham.com is your place to go for features about all Austin comedy, including those who pass through. We bring you articles and podcasts featuring the best in Austin comedy in all its shapes and formats. Started in 2016, the podcast project brings you funny people and their stories. As a fan, I like to delve into a comic's background and motivations, and we usually take a detour along the way. Consider the interview a way for you to get to know the folks that make the Austin comedy scene one of the best in the country. Today, I sit down with somebody, frankly, don't know much about him.
Yeah, I like it. But by the end of this...
By the end, we're all going to know so much more.
Yeah.
And he is from Fort Collins, Colorado. He approached me about doing the podcast, and I'm excited. I got to see him do a set for Altercation Festival last night. Killed the room. In comedy speak, that's a good thing.
It's a turn of phrase.
Yes. And if you're a fan of J.T. Haberstadt, you know that killing the room is actually a compliment. It means you're doing a good job. So we're going to learn about Fort Collins, Colorado comedy scene, and we're going to learn about our guest today.
We're all going to learn together. I'm going to learn a little bit about me, and
yep.
I'm like, wow, I didn't even know that. I'm so complicated.
That's right.
I like fun.
So now, you've broken the third wall, because this is my formal introduction now, and now Comedy Wham presents our guest, Jacob Erdman.
That's me.
I said that so fast. People are like, what's that? Jacob Erdman.
E-R-D-M-A-N. I'm actually penning a joke about how awful... I feel that my name is a very... It's hard German, E-R-D-M-A-N.
Yeah.
I've heard the... Everyone has stories about their last name, whatever. Yeah. Like, but I love it when people add letters. Like, I always get Endelman. I was like, where the heck? Out of...
Pastry.
No. Yeah.
Pastry,
exactly.
Right?
So I was like, I don't know what's going on. Or Ergman, like they just replace letters. Like, don't even bother. It's just such an easy name. It's like the German Jones. It's just so, it's phonetic. That's how easy the name is.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well.
But when I say it fast, Jacob Erdman, it's like Jacob Erdman?
Yeah, right.
It's like, well, no, but close.
Yeah.
We'll stick with that. Just say it all. Jacob Erdman. I'm like, I know who that is. That's
me. Yeah.
I'll be a Birdman. I don't give a crap.
Jacob, I like to start these off with an icebreaker. One word to describe your past.
Easy.
Easy.
Yeah. I have a joke about how easy it was. Like, I grew up middle class in a city of 10,000 people in the middle of Wisconsin.
Okay.
It's called Whitewater. And I have a joke about it, and a never tried joke. Like, in my entire life, I've always been smart enough to never try at school, athletic enough to never really try but succeed consistently at sports.
Uh-huh.
That is until I found comedy. Comedy as a passion, as my lifestyle is now, is the only thing that I've learned to try at. Because I wasn't initially good. Like, being funny is easy. Being a comedian is fucking hard.
Right.
It's very difficult to change that dialogue into a monologue and make people laugh about what you think is funny. So when I started comedy, I was so bad. This is kind of like a weird idea, but I was so bad at comedy when I started that in my little brain I was like, I can't quit at something being this bad.
Mm.
Which is reverse thinking. People usually quit when they're super bad at something like that, but I was so bad. My first 5 minutes were me choking on my own fear. I don't even think I said a word. I was like,
wow.
And then I got down, and the adrenaline rush was palpable.
Yeah.
And I just been chasing that dragon ever since, chasing that first mic adrenaline. And, you know, you get bumps like performing at Altercation Fest or bigger shows with better people and stuff. You get those bumps.
Yeah.
But I'm still chasing that first open mic adrenaline rush. Just like, can't stop, won't stop.
Fair enough. Do you have an early comedic memory when you were growing up?
I have always been very personable, and the ability to make people laugh within a dialogue is shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah.
I've always been that outgoing. Well, not always, but I think a lot of my ability to make people laugh and just be genuine is I established who I was as a person at a relatively young age. I was like 15, 16, and I knew who I was. Like, I didn't have any sort of identity crisis. People still have trouble figuring out who they are. I have been a solid person, and I knew who I was confidently basically my entire adult life, which is, I've heard pretty rare, but yeah, 15 or 16. So as a result of that, it's just been really easy to make people laugh. So it's always been a continuous thing. So long answer is no. It's always been very consistent, like getting out there and making people laugh and just being friendly and stuff. And, you know, being funny is a great characteristic. And, you know, I surround myself with people like myself. So the people I surround are the most hilarious, genuine people out there. And it's super fun because if you hang out with a bunch of comedians, it's going to be a pretty good time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, shit for happens sure. sometimes when you throw in alcohol and various sorts of drugs. But 9 times out of 10, it's going to be like the best time. Super fun. Everyone's like, especially festivals like this, when you put in a group of like pros, amateur, like all levels. But even though they're all different levels, they're still really funny people. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. So all levels of talent, all skill sets, different styles of jokes. And you throw in like pros like Ben Roy last night or Eddie Pepitone, you get to rub shoulders with like legends in your like comedy community. And you're like, wow, this is so fun. Like now I have a rapport with this person. Like, Altercation Fest 2018, hell yeah, buddy. I saw you perform. Like, you know, I assume it was a good set. People lie, but
nobody lies.
Nobody, yeah, exactly. This is comedy. I've always maintained the fact that comedy, my comedy, is based off of truth or honesty, but not necessarily truth. Mm. Like, it's a genuine feeling, but it might be, you know, obviously exaggerated and whatever, but it's not necessarily truthful, but it is honest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you live in East, I presume, because I spent 10 years in Chicago, and I used to have a client in Store Enzo, you probably know, the paper mill, one of the paper mills, but they were Stevens Point.
Totally, yep.
So I'm imagining small town.
Yep.
And when was your first open mic?
My first,
guess is not in small town,
it was not.
Wisconsin.
In fact, I was 30 when I started comedy.
Oh, wow.
So I was a bit older.
Okay.
But it's a mixed bag because I had all the life experiences under my belt, but I had none of the fundamentals of joke writing, of performing. Mm-hmm. You know, I learned entirely by fire. But my first open mic experience, like I said, was 5 minutes of me choking on my own fear and trying to chase that dragon. But it was just so crazy different and kind of like a sensory overload where my first maybe year I would get up there and it would be like a crazy sensory and I would black out. I had to start recording my sets because I couldn't remember stuff. Like, it wasn't an alcohol thing. It was a sensory overload, like that adrenaline rush, like boom. And I'll get off stage and I'd be like, what happened? Like, I sort of remember like bits and pieces. So I've lived by this philosophy. It's called ABC, always be recording. Mm. And it obviously it doesn't.
But I just realized.
Yeah. So it's always be recording and stuff because it was just so hard to remember. Because you do comedy. Mm-hmm. You know that when you're doing open mics and stuff, shit that works, shit that doesn't work, you want to remember the shit that works. Yep. And I couldn't remember shit. So I had to be listening to it and like, very meticulously, oh, this one worked well, this one didn't, cut out that part. And otherwise I would just, if I wasn't recording, then I had no idea where I was going. It was just basically treading water instead of moving forward. So
tell me, because these details are very important to a brain like mine, where was that first open mic?
Hody's Half Note in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Okay.
And so the circumstances surrounding that are kind of interesting too, because I was a 30-year-old dude. It was October 8th, 2013. I remember that because it was the first October, first Monday, it's every Monday. So it was the first Monday of that October of 2013.
Okay.
And I was going through like an emotional rut. I was drinking too much. I just wasn't happy. I was like, you know, one of those things, because, you know, life is a series of ebbs and flows. And I figured out, I looked at it from like a third person perspective, like, I'm a 30-year-old white guy. No one gives a shit about how sad I am. The world is my oyster. It had to be an internal renaissance. It had to be me picking myself out of my own rut. I didn't have a girlfriend at the time. Like, nobody cared about me. I had a decent job, but I still wasn't happy. And so I knew that I had to change something fundamentally. So within the week of October 8th, I started volunteering at a soup kitchen, started comedy, and then I started managing a band. I just had to do something different. And a lot of it had to deal with my roommate situation at the time. I was living with this female, just a roommate situation, but she was so bonkers that I had to find any and every reason to not go home. Like, for example, I would come home, and this was not a rare event, and she would be laying in the fetal position, scream crying. And I was like, I don't know you, lady. Like, I rent this room. Like, I can't help you with this situation. So I would just go home, and she'd be scream crying. I'd grab my dog and get the fuck out of there, because I don't know this person. I don't know how to help them. And I was like, no way. I'm moving out of here as soon as possible, because you're like a... She was like a 40-year-old woman, constantly fetal position, scream crying. And I was like, gross. Like, as much as I want to help you, I don't know you, you're a stranger. You're not looking for help, you're looking for attention. Mm-hmm. It seemed like it. And I just, like I said, I started comedy right away, and I had to get every reason to stay out of that house. And then I, you know, a couple months later, I just moved out. I was like, nope, I'm gonna bow out. But but comedy stuck, and it just flourished, and it became an obsession. So now I can't stop.
What, describe the scene, the comedy scene in Fort Collins then.
Me and this guy named Elliot Broder, and to a more later extent, but a more positive extent, David Rodriguez pretty much built that scene. So when we showed up, when I showed up October, it was two open mics, a Monday and a Wednesday. And one Monday night showcase at the last Monday of the month at a bar. Huh. Now, I personally book and produce four shows.
Whoa.
David does a weekly and also bigger shows like you know, Contracts and Commas in the Pay, and like Kyle Kinane's coming out and stuff, and he brings out, like, David Rodriguez is like the jack of all trades when it comes to comedy, like booker, producer, hilarious guy, genuine person, builds other comics' resumes, looks for nothing in return, because he's just a very genuine person. And he has brought, I brought the comedy scene to a local level. He brought it to a national level. But when we started, there was nothing. But like I said, we run so many shows there, and there's still room for improvement. Civilians are still thirsty for comedy. We haven't even saturated it yet. And this is a city of like maybe 200,000 people. Like, so we do it all over the city. Me and David's relationship is pretty funny, because I like to call it friendly competition. He starts booking these shows, I start getting super jealous, and so I start booking shows. Uh-huh. But then we also work together really well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll book him out, and because he's super funny, I'll give him X number of dollars to headline my show, and it's a home game for him and stuff, and he just crushes it. But then he starts a new show, and I get jealous, so I want to start a new show. But then we also trade headliners.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, I can't touch him comedically, but business-wise, like, I'm always trying to get bigger shows than him, but it's we work together. So it's like, you know, you surround yourself with people like yourself, but also who are better than you, so you can be pushed and driven.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, comedy is a shark. Either you're moving forward or you're dying. There's no middle ground.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But yeah, we really built the scene into a national level where Todd Barry has come back twice. He's double dipped Kyle Kinane. Let's see, who else? Carmen Morales just came through and did a show of runs. JT, I used to run a show at this place called Potero's Creek, and JT and Mishka, like in 2013? In like 2014-ish, he hit me up, and then so I broke JT into the Fort Collins scene. I got a bunch of my friends into comedy, so Kyle Pogue can thank me ruining his life via comedy. But he's on tour with Mishka right now. Like, he's living his dream, because he's seen these guys. He's been fans of these people for a while, and now they are peers. Like, whoa. Imagine, like, at one point that they're legendary status, and now they're actual legitimate people who are your friends now, who would, you know, you can call them your friends, which is crazy.
How long into you performing and doing mics before you started thinking, oh, I want to do more?
About a year.
Okay.
So basically the situation was...
And at that point you already knew David?
Nope. David started maybe my year three.
Okay.
Or year two and a half.
All right. So for, you know, these first few years, it's you and you're focusing on...
Yeah, me and running shows and stuff. And this is kind of funny, too. It's like, I didn't think that I was getting booked enough. So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to rely on other people to book me. I'm going to make my own show and do it the way that I want to do it, and I did.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, and then people saw that, you know, it's kind of like a frame, like a relative thing, like, wow, if Jacob can do it, let me try my hand at it. Let me negotiate. And then, you know, I'm more than happy to help somebody start up a show because I've ran so many failed shows.
Hmm. I know that's one of my questions is, have you launched any that didn't work out?
Oh my gosh,
you?
Absolutely. That's kind of like my win-loss record. My wins are huge World Series slam dunk wins, but my losses are a lot.
Oh.
I have failed at open mics, but you know, the more that you fail, the more that you learn on
sure.
what you're looking for in what you're looking for in a room, and what you're looking for in somebody to working with professionally, like a venue. Mm-hmm. And then you also learn to negotiate because now you know what you're worth and what you can bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
So I have the ability. My fingers in a lot of pies, comedically speaking, because I have access to these nationally touring headline comedians. And when they come out, I pay them as much as possible,
mm-hmm.
obviously, and I allow them to stay at my house, saving on overhead. And so you want to put like your best foot forward, and you want them, like, your takeaway is when they go back home and talk about, dude, check out Fort Collins.
Yeah.
This scene is hot. They pay well. You can crash at a house with no overhead. People are super friendly. Marijuana is legal.
Wait, that's far too low on the list, I think, for most guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Switch that to yep. number one.
So marijuana is legal.
There you go. Tell me about your first show that you produced.
My first show that I produced was with a friend of mine, still a good friend of mine. We go on tours as much as possible. His name is Elliot Broder. His stage name is Mike Hawkburns. And he went as a stage name when I first started, so I didn't even know that was a stage name. I thought that was just his name. And to this day, I refuse to call him Elliot Broder. He is, to me, Mike Hawkburns,
uh-huh.
the Mike Hawkburns. And I'm not going to, like, you know, my integrity is too high to call him by his Christian name.
Oh,
he
my
is
gosh.
Straight Mike Hawkburns for me. So basically, I asked him how to do it. And so we co-produced my first show at a place called Potero's Creek in Fort Collins, and it was this tiny pillbox area that you could jam maybe 100 people in, but it was like jam-packed, super intimate. It was Cold Town Theater.
Uh-huh.
It reminds me of that style.
Okay.
But it was attached to a brewery, so
uh-huh.
it was a tiny little room. It's called like the Wood Shop or something, but I just called it Potero's Creek Comedy Showcase. And it was until the city took the showcase away from me because they in the parking lot they made a park. And they eminent domained it and basically just took the building and then destroyed it to make a park.
Oh.
And so they took that away from me. It was the first time that I ever had negative feelings towards green space.
Hmm.
I was like, we don't need another park. We do, but we're not here.
Yeah.
So it was arguably the hottest show that has been in Fort Collins. The Colorado Room is really good right now, too. But a lot of my friends got to expose themselves comedically.
Yeah, okay. Let's
yep.
In this environment, let's be really clear about
exactly,
what that means.
Yep, exactly. And to an audience of 100 people or more in a very intimate environment, and it's just like the showcase was so fire, so magic that you couldn't do poorly.
Mm-hmm.
It was super supportive right there. Everyone was so funny, and it was just a great time. And then on our 2-year anniversary, Chris Fairbanks headlined the show.
Great.
Yeah,
that's
so fun.
Comic.
And he headlined the show, and then I got told that show that the city was taking it, and it was the last show. And we had just ironed out all the bullshit. We had just figured out how long, how to get people in there. It was so hot that we didn't even need to advertise anymore. People just knew every first Friday, go to Potero's Creek because these lineups are fucking fire.
Huh.
And so that was, like, devastating.
Yeah.
So I've been chasing that dragon ever since,
too. I was going to say, so this became your next dragon
mm-hmm.
that you were chasing. Oh, my gosh.
And then, but, you know, through hitting up venues and stuff, hitting up awful people to work with. Like, I worked with this one bar, because bars and breweries are basically the DIY scene's backbone.
Mm-hmm.
I work with some theaters and stuff from time to time, but basically it's bars and breweries. And I worked with this one bar that was so awful to work with that not when we were loading in, not even the bartenders knew that there was a show.
Oh.
I was like, this is, what are we doing here? Like, it was ambush comedy every Monday. They did no advertising. It was just really hard. And I was like, listen, bar owners, like, you're losing money because we have a guarantee. Like, we're getting paid regardless. Like, it's in your best interest to let the bartenders tell people about it. Mm-hmm. Make some handbills. I don't know.
Yeah.
So when you work with a venue that's very passionate and excited about comedy, it's very refreshing and be like, finally, like, they can take some of the load and just, like, you know, tell people and show people and brag about this is where comedy is, this is the fire.
Yeah. What is it about you that has, because the impression that I'm getting is, like, you're really tuned into the business part of comedy, not just the performance part.
Yeah, that's because I'm not that funny. So I have to have, be very, very good at some aspect of comedy. And, you know, I mean, I'll be doing comedy for the rest of my life, but I feel that my calling has been the production booking part of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I do work with a venue, they're like, oh, how many checks should I cut? Like, hey, I am your point of contact. If there's a problem with the comedian, you come to me.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a problem with the venue, you come to me.
Yeah.
I don't need those two worlds.
Yeah.
Like, because when JT's running around here, I get it. Like, you know, you're stressed out. He's he's booking, producing, running the show.
Yeah.
Any sort of drama, that's on him. He's got to do there. Like, Brad Sativa passed out last night and smashed his head against the ground. And so he was all bleeding. So, you know, it's like, oh, shit, got to put out this small fire. Got to put it out. Like, it wasn't an alcohol thing. I think it was just like a low blood pressure thing. Like, he just passed out and hit the ground. But it was it was just an example of, you put a festival together, some crazy shit's going to happen. Nothing goes according to plan because that's just life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, it's, I try to do that. I try to be the most professional person. I want venues to want me back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's the one thing. I want to be easy to work with. I want to be professional. I want the comics, like, go back to their place and be like, work with this guy. This guy, you know, he's got a good head on his shoulders, professional. On time, pays well, just work with them. So, you know, establishing a good rapport with real up-and-comers who in 5 years will be crushing it on HBO and Netflix, I'll be like, I was there. And then, you know, you call them up and hang out. When you go to their cities, they'll put you up on some shows and stuff. And, you know, their word travels. And so, yeah.
Do you ever, I don't know what brought you to Fort Collins, and I don't know if you want to explain what.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
So
I graduated college in 2006 with a GIS degree. And it's kind
I don't
of
know
a
what that is.
Geographical information studies. It's basically digital mapping.
Okay.
So I graduated with a digital mapping degree, and it's so ridiculous. It's kind of funny. So I got a job right out of college in this place called Grand Island NE. I thought, in my infinite wisdom and public schooling education, that I was moving to Grand Island, New England. Turns out, NE is the abbreviation for Nebraska.
Mm.
So I had already accepted
the
job. I had, ironically enough, graduated with a geography degree. I was traveling to a place to make maps for that place. And I thought I was going to New England.
Oh, boy.
And so I was so stoked about it. I go to my friends, I'm like, who wants to move with me to Grand Island, New England? And they're like, yeah, but where? I'm like, New England, stupid. And they're like, let me see that pizza, because I had the pizza. And I'm like, dude, you're moving to Nebraska. I'm like, fuck. I had already accepted the job.
You're a goddamn college graduate.
I know. Hey, like I said, in my infinite way, let's just say I don't know what I'm doing. Let's just put it that way. Can we
sure.
set the record straight? I don't. I lie. Really well. I fake it really well. Confidence is key.
Yeah, yeah.
I will sell myself, but I will. You panic on the inside. That's what you do. Right in here is where you panic. You keep this poker face.
Yeah, yeah,
Lady Gaga,
100%. Yeah. All right. So you're not going to Nebraska.
I did go to Nebraska.
Oh, you did?
So it was a resume building job. I was only there for 11 months.
Okay.
It was the longest 11 months of my life. It was nightmare status. Imagine moving into a city where A, super conservative, B, I had long hair, and C, I had a left-swinging political agenda. Oh, for three.
Yeah.
They were not, no one was taking friend applications. So I moved out of there the following year. I had two job offers because it was a resume building job. And so I had two job offers, a digital mapping degree or job in Fort Collins, Colorado, or, funny enough, a Dewey Electric, same situation, different company, in Austin, Texas.
Oh.
I could have moved at either place.
Oh, wow.
And so I had one, because basically the hardest part about moving somewhere is finding a place to live initially, off the bat. Like, nobody has last month's rent and a security deposit. That's like $4,000. Mm-hmm. No one has $4,000 liquid, especially working some sort of bullshit $20,000 a year job. So I had a friend who lived in Fort Collins. I crashed with him for a month, saved up money, got a place. So that's the reason. It could have been, if he had lived in Austin at the time, I'd move to Austin. And I would have, and you know, you'd be on my podcast Fort Collins at this point. But yeah, it was so funny. I feel like my life, no matter where I would have moved, I would have found comedy.
Yeah.
Like maybe a little bit later, maybe a little bit sooner. But the emotional rut would have been there regardless of the situation.
Yeah.
And so I would have found comedy either here or there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm just glad that I found it.
Like,
I'm glad that I found something that, you know, people say comedy saved my life. And I agree. It's, like, given me purpose. Mm-hmm. Like, before, like, it now I can drink and say that I'm doing something. Like,
that's true.
My alcoholism is controlled now. It's like I'm working right now. This is working. Like, when I come to a new city, I want to do all the podcasts. I want to do all the shows. I want to facilitate this dangerous, pastime. But now I can do it while working forward towards a goal, whatever that goal is.
Yeah. So are you specifically goal-oriented?
I am, short terms and long terms.
Yeah.
My first 5 years, which is coming up in October 8th, was all networking. Just buckle down and network, get to know these people, pay well, pay everybody. Produce, book. Next 5 years is going to be festivals and road gigs. Mm. And so my life is a series of phases. Like, I don't jump into something.
Yeah.
I see where it's at and I phase into it. So the moment that, so I work for a company that has super great benefits. I get 6 weeks of PTO, which is paid time off. It's
amazing.
Bonkers.
Yeah.
So I just save up all of these PTO days. And then I just go on tour. I've been on 2 week tours. I've been on 3 week tours. I've been on, you know, a weekend tour. Basically, you just save up PTO because that's where I can afford to lose money, but I'm still making my PTO money. But you get out there and you do scenes like Austin. We did Dallas Fort Worth. We did Amarillo. We actually went on the I-80 corridor. We did like Kearney, Grand Island, Omaha, Lincoln. Ames, Des Moines, like that whole idea, Chicago, that whole idea. And, you know, when you meet somebody and they know you, they can put you on shows and stuff. It's kind of a political maneuver, but it's also just investing in yourself. Like, get these people out to your shows, show them how funny you are, and, you know, and then when you go out to their scene, they're super stoked to have you. So,
then
you seek out people like you who do podcasts and stuff, and that's more exposure. Mm-hmm. And it's more drinking, and it's more partying with your peers. And, you know, sometimes a monkey wrench will get thrown in like magic mushrooms, and then you got to deal with the consequences of that. Be it good, be it bad. It's always a story. I live by the philosophy, always funny first. If I have two options, a hilarious option that's more difficult, or an easier, less story, or I'm going hilarity all the way.
Yeah.
Always funny first. You look at the options like, I'm going to do this funnier way to do it, even though it's way harder, even though it's way more difficult.
Yeah.
Let's make a story out of it. And you don't necessarily do stories for the stories, because that's a little bit contrived. You just go along for the ride and see what happens.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, like last night, I could have gone to bed, but instead we went to this hotel room and partied with a bunch of comics from Arkansas. I don't know any of their names. I just knew that they were on the festival and they were funny and I respected them.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, either go to bed or go party.
Yeah.
By 6 a.m., I was like, okay, we're tapped out.
Yeah.
6 a.m., nothing's funny happening. I take a lift home and fucking.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay, so I am going to go a little bit hard hitting.
Yeah.
Because what is coming through for me is, again, and I've said this once before, it's very business side. It's very how do shows happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, looking forward, you're thinking festivals, you're thinking touring, or road shows. Which do you love more, performing on a stage or making these connections and networks and building something?
I'm better at that, but I prefer performing because I have this ritual before I go on almost every show. I feel like I'm going to puke. It's a high anxiety. It's basically that feeling you get when you do psychedelics before they've kicked in, after you've ingested the psychedelics, just waiting for it. It's that high anxiety, like, I need to get up there. I feel like I'm going to puke. I dry heave all the time. It's kind of my thing. I always talk to my friends, like, I'm going to go outside and puke real fast. I'll be right back. It's not an alcohol thing. It's not a sickness. It's an anxiety. Yeah. But then as soon as I get on stage, it's like, there I am. Oh. And I'm not the funniest person. I'm very aware of where I stand in the hierarchy of comedy, woke, if you will. But, you know, I maintain the fact that I'll get there. I'm not deterred by the fact that I'm not the funniest person in the room. But I know that eventually I'll find my voice, I'll find it, and I'll be able to put the dialogue idea, Jacob, into the monologue idea, Jacob. And the more you perform, the better writing you get, the better performance you become, the better everything. I mean, you just have to grind. You just grind it out. And but also the networking thing is super fun, because hanging out with comedians, like I said, is a pretty good time.
Yeah.
People are they're cracking jokes all the time, riffing, just moving and hustling. And then you see business-oriented people like Sam Talent, whose shirt I have on, see how he pushes merchandise, and he's very transparent regarding pay. So that's a thing that's kind of rare in the scene. People get, like, uptight about how much they're paid or being paid.
Yeah.
But I'm like, if I don't know how much I'm worth, how can I charge? So Sam Talent's one of my favorite examples. Like, he will tell you how much he gets paid, because he wants people to know at his level he's worth this much.
Yeah.
If he's headlining a festival, he gets paid this much because he's worth this much. And he knows where he's at.
Yeah.
So you can gauge yourself accordingly in that regard, and you'd be like, okay, Sam Talent is, you know, objectively this much better than me. Let me find out how much I'm worth, and then you start negotiating. And that's one of the things too, when people come through Colorado for Collins, kids are trying to start new shows, they ask me how much I pay people, and I'm more than happy. And usually the rule of thumb is I pay 60% of my budget towards the headliner. And 60% of my budget to the headliner. The up-and-coming comics, the support group, is basically $1 a minute, and then the feature ones are $2 a minute. And so that's the paradigm that I work. Sometimes I make money, sometimes I'm in the red, but I have a Joe job, so I can afford to lose money at this point. So that's another thing, too, is I'm investing in my future in comedy by losing money at this juncture of my career.
Sure. Do you still record your sets? Because you have
I was looking for my recorder. Yeah. I always have my recorder. Yeah. A, it's my time keep, and B, I just, especially open mics, but especially festivals, a lot of especialies.
Yeah.
If everything isn't a special. But anyway, the point is, I always record it because, like I said, it's my time keep, and I want to remember it.
Yeah.
So I'll go back and be like, okay, this was a great day. Like, oh, this is Altercation Fest. Let me listen to my set real fast.
Yeah.
Or this was January 1st, 2014. It's unlistenable, but I'll still keep it. Like, my first couple years, it's like the joke. Like, one of my friends came up to me one time. He's like, Jacob, have you ever thought about doing a punchline? I was like, I don't know how to write that. I have no formal training in writing at all.
Yeah.
I moved to Nebraska on accident, and I am a geographer. If that's any frame. Yeah. One time my friend goes, Jacob, say something intelligent. And I said, charcuterie. That's the level we're working at with me at this point. That's the baseline. That's the metric we're working.
Yeah.
That's my strongest word.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate that.
I don't think it'll bleed that much. We're pretty close.
Location recording is my favorite thing in the whole wide world.
A lot of detours, a lot of left turns.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh.
A lot of environmentals.
Yes. Oh. We're going to take a little break. We never take a break in the middle of recording, but we're going to take a quick break.
You want to go tell me?
And we're back from our break. I have no idea what disaster has just happened.
You got to center yourself. Oh, I was talking about charcuterie and my baseline intelligence.
Yes, charcuterie.
Fair.
Oh, my gosh. Hi, everyone. This is Comedy Wham. No, we know this is Comedy Wham, and we're with Jacob.
Jacob Erdman.
Yes. Not Birdman.
Nope. Not Turdman, not Nerdman. Erdman.
I mean, 5 years, you're about to have your five-year anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
That's when a lot of people start to get their footing.
Yeah,
you know,
it's kind figuring of it out to a degree.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll ever figure it out because it is constantly changing, mm-hmm. and it's very fluid, but I have learned how to write a joke. I have learned how to structure an idea, mm-hmm. an overarching narrative of a bigger set. I have just figured some stuff out with no formal training, and I feel that that's a more raw take on it. Like, I've never taken a comedy class. I would be interested in taking a stand-up writing comedy class to see what I can gain from it, mm-hmm. or what I already know, or what I'm doing wrong.
Yeah,
because there is a science behind it, but it's not. But it's also an art form where you're encouraged to break the rules. If you can make people laugh by not structuring something, like, for example, there's this guy. His name is William Montgomery.
Oh my God.
You know him?
Yes, because he was just on Kill Tony.
Was he?
Yes.
Okay.
In L.A., right?
Yep.
Yep.
He's red hair.
Oh, my God. No, I didn't watch. Oh, okay. I just listened to that Kill Tony episode. He was in, it was in the L.A., because they just released a whole bunch of Michigan Kill Tonys.
And is that a podcast?
Tony Hinchcliffe.
Okay.
Where you draw a name from a bucket, and the person comes up and does a minute. And he blew Tony away.
He has the craziest jokes that don't even have punchlines.
No,
it's just how no one can do his comedy. So basically, he's got a joke. He's like, I found out that Viagra didn't, like, this is just a preface. A paraphrase of his joke, because no one can do it like him. But he's like, he's like, I just found out that Viagra doesn't protect you from AIDS. What am I going to do now? And then just moves on. Just that's it.
Yes.
And then he got another one. He's like, so I recently saw Count Dracula. I thought he'd be a little bit taller. That's it. He saw Dracula, thought he'd be taller, and he moves on to the next joke.
Yeah.
He headlined one of my shows once, and for 20 minutes, I shit you not, 20 minutes, he played three notes on a keyboard, and when anyone laughed, he would say, hey, no laughing, and then just go back to this. It was so meta funny that he's one of those comics that as soon as you find out how funny he is, you go and you aggressively see him. But if you are looking for some structured stand-up comedy, it will be the weirdest experience. Yeah. Like, what am I watching? Like, I don't know if he's necessarily a comic, but he's a very niche comic. Mm-hmm. But he's one of my favorites. Yeah. And he's such a sweet person. Mike Hochbrenz introduced me to him because he's originally out of Memphis, I believe. Don't quote me on that, but somewhere in Tennessee area, North Alabama, something like that.
That sounds about right, because I think he mentioned that.
And so, his take on comedy breaks all the rules. No structure, no punchlines, just him being funny. And it's just like sometimes he takes the negative space in the sense that he will stop in the middle of a set, go to his joke book and just page through. And look up and page through, and it's just like that's the joke. It's
that's like were you here during the brunch?
Mm-hmm.
Jay. Oh God.
Oh, the guy. I wasn't here for him. I was here at the very beginning of the McEwans. I left her in the middle to do Derek's podcast.
Oh, that's right, that's right. So you may have missed him. But,
yeah, he did the shows last night.
Right. Well, he had the crowd dying laughing just because he was playing with the three different microphones.
Oh, really?
And he'd just trade. And he wasn't addressing the fact that he was
doing
it, which had the audience roaring. So, yeah, it's like sometimes breaking the rules, but, I mean, you have to have a special personality type to even know to break the rules.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's his take on comedy, and it's like one of those things where comedy, there is a structure, there is a science to it, but there's also the Emo Phillips people out there that are just, like, crazy weird. There are the William Montgomerys. There are these people who don't play by the rules and are still so funny that you're like, we need you to be on my show.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God, how wild that name came up.
Because totally.
I've just been obsessing about him since. And he just did a minute on this podcast.
I'm telling you.
We'll talk about that after.
Absolutely. He's so funny. Check out more of his stuff. But his jokes are, that's how he structures his jokes. What the fuck was that?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
But you leave a William Montgomery show because he's a destination. And if it's ambush, you will have no idea what hits you. Either you will love it or you will fucking hate it. There's no middle. There's not being like, he was okay. Like, no, he was hilarious. This is next level comedy. This is,
It is always fun as the fan. It is always fun when I see somebody come through, and even there's people here locally that's like, nobody knows what to do with you, but what you are doing is so great.
Agreed.
And you know, I think I have a kinship with you because I certainly am not naturally gifted at writing, so I have to work really hard if I want to do a joke. But I also have that, okay, I'm really super well organized. I understand business, so I can get things done. But it's kind of cool from your perspective and where you're at 5 years in, that at the time that you're really working that business side and where you're about to hitting that 5-year threshold, the 5 to 10 years, oh my God, these things are going to collide together. And like,
it's just investing in my future. I just got to wait for it. I got to grind it out, be funny, be professional, be a good person, have people want you to be there.
Right.
And it works well with venues too. Like, for example, a lot of my shows are at breweries. I'll go pick up glasses so they don't have to. Like, not every show is going to be a zinger. Not every show is going to be a sold-out show. But you don't want them to get cold feet when there's like 2 or 3 bad shows in a row, because you got to be like, hey, listen, that's the name of the game. Yeah. That's how it happens. Yeah. It ebbs and it flows. That's life. But you want them to not cancel the show because they're afraid. They were like, we'll give him some time because he's a good guy. And, you know, we're not losing money per se. We're just not making as much as we would like. Yeah. And so you just got to be professional and courteous and a good person. And, well, like, you got to be good to work with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And it honestly isn't that hard. But there are so many awful people out there to work with that it's just like, you would think that it's not that hard. Mm-hmm. I guess it just comes naturally to me. It's not something that I have really cultivated. It's just like, integrity is key, and be a good person.
Yeah.
You'd think that would be natural, but there's a lot of shitty people out there, it turns out. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Universal theme. Actually, not even just specific to comedy.
Exactly.
Being in the unique position that you're in, a lot of times when I'm having a conversation with a comic, I'm asking them, all right, so is it going to be LA or New York for you? So you have cultivated, you have been part of cultivating a comedy scene. Does that even come across your...
No. God, I'm posting up in Fort Collins because I want to make comedy sustainable. My sustainability is predicated on making sure that I have inflow. Mm-hmm. If, like I said, my life is a series of phases. So what I do, I tell people this all the time, like, basically, a metaphor for my life is me falling down a hill and accidentally landing on my feet. And then the cliff gives way, and I fall down the hill, and I land on my feet again. I'm like, holy shit, what's happening? Fall down the hill. Land on. So I bought a house in Fort Collins, Colorado at just the right time, completely on accident. I didn't do this on purpose. In 2 years after I bought the house, the housing market went vertical, up. And so I bought a house for $199. I got it refinanced 2 years later at the historic low APR, again, on accident. I heard that there was free money in refinancing it. And I was like, okay, I can consolidate debt. Uh-huh. It just turned out to be during the historic low. So I did that. And I got it appraised for the refi. At 2 years with doing just a paint job and installing a hardwood floor, it got reappraised at $300,000. Dude, I'm worth six figures minus closing costs. I do not look like a guy who has commas in his bank account. That is not a thing that people are like, this guy has money, he's good at something. Like I said, I just fell down the hill and I landed on my feet. And so that's another thing that makes comedy sustainable is all the comics come to Fort Collins, they crash at my house. Mm. It's relatively clean, it's safe, relatively to a single white guy, like relative, in that regard, there's not dirty dishes everywhere, but there are some hairballs from my dog, like not puke hairballs like a cat, just like my dog sheds, and I haven't swept in a month. Uh-huh. Like, that's on me, I get it, but it's relatively clean.
Get a Zumba, dude.
Okay, will do. Relatively
clean.
Check
out the equity loan. Get a
exactly. Yeah, maybe some. Yeah, refi again, but. Have them stay at my house. Laundry's a big thing. When people are on tour, they don't want to pay $5-$10 for laundry. Dude, do it at my house. Mm-hmm. Come out, crash, party with me. Dave Waits come out like 3 or 4 times. He's an LA comic. But anyway, my point is about the inflow thing is that when my roommates pay their rent, I'm in the black for my house. So I haven't paid rent in like 2 years, which is great. It frees up like $600 a month.
Yeah.
And also, we just built a bedroom in my garage. Mm. Always funny first. We just built a bedroom in my garage. Non-legal, by the way. So if there's anyone from Fort Collins Police Department listening to this, totally not legal. I'm not going to tell you where.
You don't want to admit that.
I don't want you to know where I live, though. So go search all over Fort Collins for the non-legal bedroom in the fucking...
Because we're not going to attach your name to this podcast at all.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Anonymity is the key for Comedy Wham.
All right.
But so now I have a place to rent out my entire house and live in my garage. Mm. So when I go on tour, I'll be in the black. When all my roommates pay rent, I'll be in the black already $700.
Yeah.
And then my little brother's letting me borrow one of his fifth wheels, RV campers. I'm going to Airbnb that. So that's another inflow. So like I said, comedy has to be sustainable. Like a lot of comics drop off because they can't afford to do it anymore. They're sick of that paycheck to paycheck lifestyle. They want to just... I am investing in my future where I will be on the road 40 weeks out of the year. Because, like I said, if you're not moving forward, you're dying. Mm-hmm. It's a shark. And so... I want to be able to do shows where I don't rely on their money entirely. I'll have this back end inflow, this passive income, so I can be like, okay, like I'm still good to go. My house is still paid for. I don't have to worry about that much. I'll just do some slight budgeting. So basically, I'm just investing in making comedy sustainable for my future.
Yeah.
But that does not incorporate accidentally knocking a girl up, which may or may not happen.
Oh,
it's
boy.
Just one of those things like, I'd be like, fuck. Now I got to figure this out.
Yeah, there are ways to prevent that, Jacob, but that's for a different podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not for this podcast.
Is that the gender fluid one?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
That may be too tame,
actually. Oh, yeah. No, Ariel was out for a while. Her comedy is so great.
Oh,
it was so funny
amazing.
Because, like, she was broaching subjects that no one has ever talked about.
No,
and it's like she's making the audience more woke by being up there funny and attractive. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny.
She's one of my favorite humans.
Totally. Yeah. Such a sweetheart. Yeah. She actually spent, I brought
a
her
while.
Out. Yeah. Like about a week, like maybe 5 to 7 days. I forget, but
And I was curious cause I follow, respectfully all of her movements.
Oh
and
man.
I'm like, oh my, Fort Collins? Never. What?
Yeah, exactly.
She could spend a week out there
mm-hmm. with well-paid shows, headlining gigs. And if shit falls through, for example, one of the shows fell through 2 days before. So I just laddered her onto another one of my shows and bumped two local people, which is so easy because, you know, like, hey, I apologize, but, you know, she
you
got bumped.
Up to them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're local. They're not they're not traveling across the country and losing money. They're losing a little bit of money.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's like, you know, they would much rather be like, oh, dude, yeah, totally book her.
Yeah.
We'll be here. This is a home game for us. It's an away game for her. Like,
yeah.
So that's one of the things, too, is that I book local kids, pay them. But if a curveball comes, I'd be like, yo, I'll make it up to you. I'll pay you double next time just to, like, as more of, like, you know, a respect thing. Like, thank you for doing me this favor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're staying in Fort Collins.
I am posting
up. You're going to road the warrior this for, you know.
As long as it takes.
Yeah.
Another thing about comedy is, like, people get kind of, you know, not motivated because it's so difficult, because it's a fucking Everest.
Mm-hmm.
If your motivation to do comedy is being rich and famous, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. You have to define what it is. So do you want to make it?
Mm-hmm.
What is it to you? Me, I'll be headlining bar shows for the rest of my life, and I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah.
Let me Mishka Shubali the shit out of this place. Fucking just road dogging it, enjoying life, like not that button up, like... lifestyle, kind of like that I have now, but like I said, it's a series of, it'll phase out eventually. And I was doing the math and I was like, you know, 20 to 30 grand a year is very easy to live off of, especially since I don't have to pay rent. And my car is paid for, I can live out of my car when I'm on the road. But that equals maybe $500 a week. When I get good enough, that'll be cakewalk. That'll be like three weekend shows, depending on my skill level. Which hopefully is good.
Yeah.
So, you know, $500 a week, you know, just like I said, 40 weeks out of the year, 40 to 50, I mean, depends on how much. And also the shows that I run in Fort Collins are pretty tight and hot, so that's a little bit of more passive income, like doing what I love and making $60 or something like that. So it's all about sustainability. That's the name of comedy. Being funny, sustainable, and also being like a good person.
Yeah.
Not being a total weird creep, because that's a thing that's coming around too. Like, there's a lot of gross dude comics, like accosting, assaulting, sexually or otherwise. Just like, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't just, you know.
It's 2018.
Don't. Yeah. It's really easy to say, to accept I'm not interested in you sexually.
Yeah.
It's so, I mean, I've lived with it my entire life. That's kind of my thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, in fact, when girls are interested in me, I'm like, what? I'm not used to that. Like, this whole, get out of town. This whole thing? All right. Wait until you meet me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll prove you wrong.
There was a comic that I was talking to last night, and I was so impressed because they said they're a touring comic, and they said they just canceled a whole slate of shows because their booker, apparently a guy, was creepy and assaulting and predatoring.
Yeah.
And I'm like, go you.
Yeah,
go
no
you
kidding.
For standing up, because
exactly.
You know, we,
you don't need to tolerate that, because literally those are coworkers. That's how this is our office.
Yeah.
This is our church.
Yeah.
We're not Catholic.
Yeah.
Which is a very layered idea, but the point is just don't.
And it's not just don't. It's when you see somebody else doing,
call
them out on their bullshit.
Exactly.
We're not tolerating.
And there was a thing. I was running a show. I was booking for a small sustainable living fair, and one of the girl comics I thought was being approached upon by a gentleman. So what did I do? I walked over there. I was like, "Hey, is everything cool?" She's like, "Yeah, totally fine." That's all I needed. Mm. I felt a weird vibe, but she's like, "Everything's fine. I can handle myself." I'm like, "Thank you, but I'll be right here if there's anything." Like, I'll be drinking beers with the other people. So. But that's the thing, so if you see, like, someone getting cornered, just be like, hey, is everything cool?
Yeah.
Either get a yes or a no, and if it's a no, like, okay, buddy, like, you heard the lady, like, back up.
Yeah.
But it's, I think Dave Waite has a joke about it. He's, like, talking about how creepy guys have had it all the way up until earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
The entire history of human civilization, creepy guys have been non-called out, and now when women start getting equal rights and stuff, it's like, sorry, creepy dudes, your time is over. You had enough time. You had hundreds of thousands of years. Get over it. Your time is done. Quit being an asshole.
Unless you are a nominee for the Supreme Court, but that's for another
podcast. That's another thing. That's a or you hold the highest political office in the United States,
or that. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we are going to start wrapping on that note.
Exactly.
No, this good stewardship of your community is much appreciated.
Absolutely. And, thank you so much for having me, by the way. This is great.
Is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like to make sure that people know about you?
My comedy is very graphic. I pull no punches.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. No, it's fun. I like traveling, and so comedy kind of fit in that niche. It's filling that need to just, because you live in a city long enough, it gets closed in on you no matter how big the city is. You got to get out.
Right.
If you live in a big city, sometimes you got to go to the mountains. Sometimes you got to go to a different city. Not like when Fort Collins gets too close. I have so many friends in Denver now that I can just go down there and party for a weekend and come back and be cool about it.
Yeah.
So. I'm just constantly trying to hit the road, trying to be a road dog, trying to afford it. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So hopefully in a couple of years you'll be able to see me all throughout the country at various intervals and various markets and just, and basically comedy, like I kind of came up with this when I was drunk. I was like, dude, those road dogs are like tempered by the heat of the street. Like, you see road dog comics, those people are tight. Good, because they've seen all sorts of audiences. They dealt with all situations. Carmen Morales is one of my favorite. Chris Shaw, one of my favorite. You see those people interact with a crowd that you think is going to be tough on them, dude, they welcome it. Yeah, bring on the challenge, because I've been there. I've done that. Let me, a new challenge, I will meet this challenge. And Yeah, a lot of the best comics obviously have been on the road for so long. Sam Talent, for example, Tempered by the Heat of the Street. It's just really fun to see people work. Yeah, not all shows are going to be a zinger, but you know what? You're not going to be bored. That's it. You're not. You may not be laughing hysterically, but you will not be bored.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. I like to close these up. One word to describe your future.
Oh, God. I don't know. Hopefully bright, but also hazy. Hazy. Just, we'll see when we get there.
It rhymes with your past word, easy.
Easy and hazy.
Yeah. All right, cool. That is a wrap on Comedy Wham Presents Jacob Erdman. Tell us where we can find you on social media.
I run a comedy. My comedy production is 970 Comedy. Mm-hmm. It's the area code of Fort Collins area, so it's super easy to remember. Instagram, 970 Comedy. I don't really do Twitter. It doesn't really appeal to me. Apparently, people love it, but I'll never know. And Facebook, Jacob Erdman.
Okay.
That's Erdman.
Yes. Mm-hmm. E-R-D.
Yeah, exactly.
Man.
Yeah. Man. That's me. If you ever see me, you're like, that's a man. With a lot of debt.
Because you're making all these.
Exactly. Like I said, I'm investing in my future. Right now, I'm a little bit in the red. I hope those red numbers are a good thing.
We hope you've enjoyed learning about how Jacob got to be the comedic genius that you heard today.
Okay, what? Pump the brakes here. There's been like four geniuses in the history of mankind, and Jacob Erdman is not one of them. Maybe a little woke.
Got to be the comedic woke genius.
Whoa, geez.
I'm not taking away the genius.
Okay.
Sorry, I never do. It's part of the.
All right.
This is
okay.
The contract that you signed.
It's
beforehand.
Verbally.
Yeah. All right. That you heard today, just as much as I have. Be sure to visit comedywham.com and give us a follow on Twitter and Instagram at comedywham, and please like our Facebook page. You can listen to past interviews. We are over 125 interviews.
Yeah.
On iTunes or your favorite podcast player, and please review us while you're at it. This has been Comedy Wham Presents Jacob Erdman, or Jacob Erdman.
Yeah, that's the spirit.
I'm Valerie, and that's been funny. Thank you, Jacob.
Thank you.